This is Akash Vani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on India's stable policies, roadmap to become third largest economy by 2028. The participants are Jayant Roy Chaudhary, economic analyst, and Arjun J. Chaudhary, anchor.
We would be talking with Jayant Roy Chaudhary, our expert on India becoming the world's third largest economy by 2028, according to the Morgan Stanley report, on the basis of the macroeconomic indicators, political stability, and more importantly, India being one of the largest consumer markets in the world. Jayant, good to have you on the program and discussion.
Thank you, Arjun. Yeah, it's really heartening to know that despite all that has been happening all over the world, Morgan Stanley believes in us. And they are justified, of course, because Indian economy's fundamentals have not changed, despite the fact that we have shown a little bit of a blip in the past few months. Our exports have been down, as you know. Consumer confidence has been a little lower. But these are passing phases. Basically, the fundamentals of Indian economy remain extremely strong. We have what is called a demographic dividend, which is playing out, and it will play out till at 2030, 35. Secondly, very importantly, India's share of the global manufacturing is growing, mainly because of offshoring. A large number of companies want to do a China Plus strategy. If you want to do a China Plus strategy, you have to go to one of the emerging economies, either India or Vietnam or Cambodia. Amongst them, we have one of the best scientific and technical manpower pools. So that is what is attracting them. Plus, of course, stability, political stability, a surety, certain sureties are there. So India is an attractive destination. Domestically generated funds, which are invested into manufacturing, is also helping us a lot. Lastly, but not leastly, the fact that we have caught on to the bandwagon of new technology, what is called the fourth industrial revolution, is working to our advantage. We are trying to green our economy. That's a huge area where we are working on, whether it is energy, whether it is renewables, etc. So this is another area which is helping us. Of course, there are downsides. We all know it, that there are, whenever you speak about any kind of a success story, there can be downsides. We have to be wary of that. Firstly, and most importantly, the fact is that though we have a demographic dividend, that means much of our population is very young, we have to train them. We have to spend enough money on educating them, training them, giving them skills which are needed for the new industries which are emerging. If we are unable to do it and in time, then that demographic dividend is frittered away. That is one. Secondly, when people offshore, they have choices. We are not the only ones. We have to understand that Southeastern Europe is full of countries which have an equally strong young population, which has many infrastructural advantages. Maybe their wages are slightly higher. Then the productivity factor is much higher there. We have to look into how to increase the productivity of Indian workers and Indian factories. It's not just that the workers are unproductive, they are extremely productive. There are many factors which go into making a certain unit productive. Those include tweaking the technology used, tweaking the capital that is used, etc. So we'll have to be wary of that, but we are on a positive trajectory as of now.
So Jayant, speaking about productivity, let's focus on productivity in terms of the macroeconomic indicator, GDP, gross domestic product. So India's GDP as of 2023 is valued at $3.5 trillion. And the Morgan Stanley reports a projection for 2028 is India would grow to a $5.7 trillion economy, overtaking Germany after expanding to a $4.7 trillion economy by 2026. So we're talking about a year from now, and then of course 3 years from now. Could you tell us why this optimism on the part of Morgan Stanley now in the middle of the US trade and tariff war?
US trade and tariff war is also another point which can go against us. Let's face that. We have to accept that. The global oil prices, these are external shocks that we must face up to and be ready for them. But the point is this, that while the other economies, we have slowed down. Our growth is at 6.2 or something last quarter that was reported by NSSO. But comparatively, other economies have slowed down further. China is not growing them at more than 5%. So we have to take those into account. That is one big factor. Secondly, the demographic dividend is playing out in our favor. The Chinese cannot catch up with us on that. Because we are a younger nation, because growth hasn't plateaued out, which is why Morgan Stanley feels we can continue to grow. So what is it that is in store for us? Mainly, we have to increase our share of the global GDP. So Morgan Stanley feels we can come up to something like 4.5% by 2029, which is how we will really be able to come somewhere nearby. But to do that, we have to stay focused. We have to invest a lot of money into basic education, basic skills training, plus superior skills training. If you want to become an AI-based nation, you have to train people to use AI. AI is a tool. It's not a wonder witchcraft thing which you can just wave the wand and you suddenly have a huge GDP. That's not the way it works. You have to be able to use it. To be able to use it, you have to be able to produce it. So two things. One, the R&D is required. Two, a labor force which is able to use AI tools. So all that has to be worked in. You have to suddenly gate crash from a second industrial revolution right up to the fourth industrial revolution, bypassing the third industrial revolution, which you will skip somehow. So that is what is required. Can we do it? Yes, we can. Which is why they have given three cases, a bear case, where our GDP will be by 2035, something like $6.6 trillion. A base case, which they say is going to be about 8.8. And a bullish case where we will cross $10 trillion. Now, will we be there? I don't know. It all depends upon what policy choices we make, how much we are able to implement. Because remember, it's a huge 1.4 billion people. So it's a huge, huge, huge country. And taking the entire country along is not so easy. If you want your country to develop, it's not just education that you have to spend a lot of money on healthcare. Unless you have a healthy workforce, you cannot at all think of the kind of growth rates that we are dreaming of. We need to grow by 7 to 8% every year. To do that, you have to be able to avoid many more pandemics. You have to have a healthcare system which is resilient, which is able to give your citizens the chance to do well. You have to have an education system which is tuned to new systems and new educations which come by.
Jayanto, you mentioned about some of the factors that would lead India into either a bear, base or a bull phase in terms of its GDP growth. According to the Morgan Stanley report, capital expenditure has been a central theme in the budgetary allocations by the government of India. And the Morgan Stanley report mentions about public, household and private corporate capital expenditure as well. So it's not just capital expenditure on the part of the government, but you have households and, of course, the private corporate sector. Then we're also talking about inflation control, and that's also a very important part of the projections by the Morgan Stanley report. And they feel that inflation control by the government has been consistent. The projection is 4.3 year on year in the financial years 2026 to 2027 and 4.9% in the financial year 2025. And of course, this is relative to what's happening elsewhere in the world where inflation has tended to go out of control. So we're talking about inflation targeting consumers and inflation targeting businesses. Both go hand in hand. How important are capital expenditure and inflation control performance by India? So important to these projections.
Yeah, so let's take capital expenditure in the first case. The government has been spending. There's no doubt about it. It has a better budget. It has been able to, its debt is more or less in control. The point is not that. The point is that the private investors have been a little chary of investing in India. It's not just the FPIs we are talking about. We are talking about investment per se. So there has been this hesitancy ever since the COVID has happened. There was a blip in the beginning. There was a return to investment mainly because you wanted to come back to full capacity. But once that is done, it's the question of fresh investments. You need to have fresh investments in order to grow your economy. So that's not happening as much as we would like it to happen. Investors are chary. They are reluctant. Secondly, with signals of a global slowdown, small investors are the households, are chary of spending money on big ticket investments. That means housing stock, that means cars, automobiles. Automobile sales are down, as you know. Savings rate is not as healthy as it used to be, mainly because interest rates have come down and the stock market is not so dependable. So we have a problem there, no doubt about it. But I would imagine that these are not long-standing problems. They will be solved. The stock market will not remain in a bear mode forever. Investments in real estate will also go up. Your population goes up. They will need houses. They will need cars and things will come back to normal. But it is going to take some time. It's not going to happen overnight. Morgan Stanley report or no wrong Morgan Stanley report, you will have a problem because there is a lack of confidence all over the world. It's not just in India. However, inflation control. Now, there is a school of thought which says that if you have inflation, some healthy dose of inflation, that actually it increases, it helps spur up growth in the country. But yes, runaway inflation is always dangerous because consumerism is then affected. Consumers are impacted. They don't want to spend because prices are too high. Some of it we have been seeing in the past few months. So inflation control is extremely important. The problem is that you cannot always control inflation. Why? Because there are external factors. Let's take the oil shock, for instance. As you remember, even in September last year, Brent crude, a barrel of Brent oil was selling at $78. It's now about $68. It had gone down a little more, 62, 64 at some time, but it's now 68, which is also favorable to us. But you never know. Houthis were attacked. If the Houthi problem is solved, your oil prices might actually fall. But if the Houthi problem is not solved, if the war in Middle East expands, then you have a problem on your hand. Whatever OPEC wants to do, OPEC wants to increase production, whatever it does, but people won't produce if you have a war on. And there will be, obviously, shipping prices will go up, insurance costs will go up. So ultimately, your oil prices will have to go up. Shale oil deposits, we have found lots of shale oil deposits in USA. In fact, we might be buying a lot of oil from USA. But the point is, US shale oil is not very economic as of now, until and unless prices rise. So there will be those who will be betting on prices rising. So what do you do in that case? You have to minimize, yet at the same time, control inflation. Food inflation is just a small part of the game. You have food inflation, which is a temporary thing. It happens because your crops fail or your crops don't really, it doesn't come up in the way you want. But those are also factors we have to take into account.
Another factor that Morgan Stanley has pointed out is our credit to GDP ratio. So we're talking about access to credit, loans for consumers and businesses in order for them to invest and, of course, spend within the economy itself. As we're talking about consumer demand, we're talking about the business demand, and it's all linked to monetary policy, the RBI's repo rate, the rate at which it lends money to commercial banks. So how do you see both of that playing out since you've already spoken about inflation and inflation control?
Let's see, credit, there was a credit slowdown as far as industrial offtake, non-food credit is concerned. We saw that in the last year or so. One way of encouraging it is to reduce, or rather, you reduce the repo rate and then, or the reverse repo rate, and you banks are given a signal and they start cutting interest rate, borrowing and doing that. But it doesn't always help. If there is a general sentiment against investment, then it won't really help you so much. But it might encourage, so people are hoping that the Reserve Bank is going to cut more interest rate. They have already cut it, as you know, after many, many, many months. But let's see what happens as we go forward. The other part is the wrong kind of credit does not really help you. We were seeing a lot of credit was being pumped into credit cards. That does increase consumerism to some extent, but it actually also leads to a lot of, and also microfinance. But there is also this danger that if you overlend to a certain sector in a certain manner, then you may have a lot of bad loans. We have seen that in the past. Other societies have also seen that in the past. Unbridled lending on credit cards can lead to personal delinquencies, and you have a situation where credit card business starts failing. So that would be another unmitigated disaster if that were to happen. I think we are, as a country, as a people, we are more attuned to saving, we are more attuned to stopping from unbridled consumerism. So person always takes into account what is the earning capability when he goes into, borrowing. He doesn't really, we usually do not, as a nation, as a society, we don't encourage it too much. But let's see how it plays out, because if we are trying to catch up with the West on many accounts, we might catch up with them even on the credit card delinquencies.
So thank you so much, Jayanto, for giving us your views and opinions on Morgan Stanley's report on India growing to be the third largest economy by 2028 based on three scenarios, overtaking Germany, 3 to 4 year period. Thank you so much, Jayanto.
Thank you, Arjun.
You were listening to a discussion on India's stable policies, roadmap to become third largest economy by 2028. The participants were Jayanth Roy Chaudhary, economic analyst, and Arjun J. Chaudhary, anchor. The program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. The program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about the program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 928-909-4044.